down, Michael. So go for it.
I clicked a little early. I got a itchy clicker finger.
You practiced that 5 times.
And he did it wrong.
Well, welcome, folks. It is just on time to start, and Michael opened us up with a little soundtrack there to begin with. So welcome to another one of our Multiply Vineyard webinars this afternoon.
I can do it one more time. There you go.
And what better way to start a webinar on marriage than Michael starting us off with that song? John Arelli says, "I love them." He just says that in there. And Jackson says, "These are my parents." We have Michael and Brenda's son joining us for the webinar here. So welcome to everybody else. If you haven't clicked open your chat window, click the button in your top left and just say hi and tell us where you're coming from today. We have folks all the way from Dublin, Ireland. We see you there. Anne Marie, welcome. And Conrad from Marysville, Ohio. So we got folks all over the country. Today we're going to spend about 60 minutes together and dive really deeply into what are kind of the key components of having a healthy marriage and a healthy ministry, and what does it look like to pastor together? Both Phil and Jan and Michael and Brenda have been doing this for a long time, and they've been specifically called to do this kind of ministry together. And so we're just going to really dive in and hear a little bit about how to do that well, and how to make it for the long haul. And so we're gonna talk with them. Phil and Jan, why don't you just say hi to everybody, and how are you doing today?
Hey, folks. We are doing quite well. We're up here in Duluth. We've got doing some HLI classes. Jan and Jenna Stepp are doing a women's conference this weekend. We're going to do the weekend services. We're celebrating Michael's 77th birthday
today.
We're having a great time. Just great people to be around, having a lot of fun.
Wonderful. And Gatlin's, why don't we start with you, Brenda? How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing pretty well, considering we're having a regional women's conference with 500 women showing up tomorrow. And thank you for strategically placing this in my life right now, Justin. I appreciate that. But you know what? One of my favorite things about being married to Michael is doing ministry with him. So I'm pretty excited to talk about this today. And we've gotten to share it in other formats with couples along the way, but not like this. So
yeah, there you go.
That's great. Well, we want to hear from everybody else. We have a bunch of folks joining us right now. And I'm just going to launch a quick poll because we want to hear. You should have a screen popping up right now. So tell us about yourself. Are you discerning your calling in ministry? Maybe you're a church planter. You're preparing to plant a church, or you have planted in the last 2 years. Maybe you're a pastor or other. Tell us more if there's more to that one. So kind of dive in there with your votes. And as we get going, I'm going to just invite kind of some openness. We want to put the cards on the table here. So often when we talk about marriage in church circles, it looks a little too polished, right? You know, you've all heard the marriage seminar and things are just a little too perfect. What were you going to say, Michael?
So I don't know what church circles you run in, but not at night by church circles.
Exactly. So we have our leaders are going to lead by example here, just being kind of honest. And I'd like to ask this question as we begin. Hey, Phil and Jan, would you tell us about a time where, you know, ministry and marriage, there was just a little tension, maybe just a touch of tension that you guys experienced going through life together?
Well, we don't really have any of those, but I could tell you a lot about Michael and Brenda. I've done a lot of counseling with them through many dangerous toils and snares. But I'm so proud that they've made it this far. Jan and I've been doing this for a while, and we have had some really funny moments that in the moment they weren't funny and they were rough, and we learned some pretty hard lessons. But one in particular that I'll let Jan give the details, they might be more accurate, but I came home from a ministry trip, and I'd been studying, and then in the summer we were getting ready to move to the place we were going to go do ministry after graduation. So it was a very busy year. Then it was a very busy summer. And I got back just before classes started. I'd been gone for several weeks into another country. When I got home, I was traveling with two colleagues, two guys that I'd gone through school with that were also moving where we were moving. And when I got home, the other two wives greeted their husband. They'd come alone to the airport. They had gone out and bought 90s and all that stuff. And when I came through customs, Janet greeted me with a handshake. And she had brought somebody else with her so we wouldn't have to be alone. And when she reached her hand out and said, "Welcome home," I knew, uh-oh, I've missed a signal. Something's wrong here.
Yeah, so we were in Bible school together at the time with the children. We had a probably 5 and 3-year-old. And up until that time, Phil and I had done all our ministry together. We'd been hand in hand. It was something we'd gone to South America together. And then suddenly Phil was just out straight all the time. I felt like I hardly ever saw him. And then he went away for 7 weeks on this ministry trip. And so in my mind, I started to draw the conclusion that when he got home, I wasn't actually going to miss him. And I didn't even really miss him when he was gone, because I didn't see him anyway. And so I was happy to be a mother. I loved my children. And of course I loved Phil too, but we had just grown into what I now recognize as what we call married singles. So everyone else was all excited about their husbands coming home. And I was just like cold hearted. I was like, this isn't so great. And so everyone else, as Phil said, was going and preparing for a romantic rendezvous. And I was like, I don't even care. So when Phil came home, I'm like, "Hey, buddy, welcome home." And it was a long ride home from the airport that day. Horrible.
How did we solve that? What happened? Did they turn on the charm?
No.
Win you back?
We talked about what had really happened. Yeah, how our lives had just become married singles, and we made a fresh commitment to our marriage and to not only having a vision for ministry, but having a vision for our marriage. And so things definitely changed. I don't remember another handshake at the airport after that. It was, yeah.
That's great. Thanks, Phil and Jan. Michael and Brenda, have you ever guys had a little bit of tension along the way while doing ministry?
Well, apparently all the stuff that Phil has counseled us through.
Yeah. Well, I have a good story about Michael and me and some tension that we had. I think we got in an argument about about roles, you know, roles in the family, roles in our marriage and our relationship. And he was telling me that it was my job to check the oil in the car. And I was
in her car,
him,
not my car, her car.
Can he talk while I'm talking?
I just did. You guys work it out. Just work it out.
Okay, so we were arguing about who was supposed to change the oil in my car. And he was telling me it was my job. And I was telling him that was something he could do for me. And I'm listing off all the things that I do for the family. And it was a Sunday morning. And so we're on our way to church. And by the time we get to church, we're just fighting and crying. I'm upset. And so I say, "I'm not going into church like this. Turn around and take me home." So we had to drive 30 minutes to church. So we turned around and got back to the house. And I said, "I'm not going in the house with you and sitting there with this going on. Take me back to church." And so we turned around and drove back to church. And we came in and I was crying. The kids were crying. And my friends came and kind of scooped me up and took me aside, and you know, someone took my babies and they started ministering to me, and the guys came around Michael and took him down the hall and started pray for him, and then we went and, you know, worshiped and sat together. We walked up holding hands and got prayer from, you know, several couples, and we went home a family. And I always think about, I tell that story sometimes because I think that we have to commit to run to the church when we're in trouble. Instead of away from the church. You know, it's so easy to not come to church when things don't look good or we're not doing well. But just to teach ourselves and teach people to make that commitment that when we're in trouble, we'll run to God's people, not away from them. And we had made that decision before the fight. And so that was partly why, you know, we made the decision to turn around and go back to church that day. But it was memorable.
Oh, yeah. Mother's Day. I call it the Mother's Day Massacre.
Is that what, last year?
Last year. No, that was a long time ago.
1993 or something like that.
Well, thank you guys for your honesty. And I just think, you know, from one who is more newly married than you guys, you know, seeing that kind of vulnerability around this is really hard to do ministry together and to be married together. It brings a lot of openness. As Luke Garrity says, hashtag Mother's Day Massacre in the chat window. Thanks, Luke. Hey, I want to share just a quick results from our poll. We have about half of the folks who are here are pastors. Welcome, folks who are pastors. Another 31%, so are church planters. Welcome to folks who are church planting or in the process. 10% of you are discerning your call to ministry. And another 10% have, you know, are kind of in a different role and letting us know via the chat window. I'm going to share one more poll here before we keep on going. We want to hear, this is a kind of a specific question. We want to hear, are you married and are you doing ministry with your spouse? So much of this conversation feels very pointed towards couples who are doing ministry together, but we also know that that's not the only way to do ministry, right? And so, Phil, would you just kind of start us a little bit about knowing your calling? Because so much of this is based on calling, right? And your guys' calling is specific.
Yeah, I think it's so important that when we talk about marriage and ministry that there's no model put out there, because so many couples do this in different ways. And one person's armor cannot be put on another, or the way that ministry works. And I mean, I'm really serious with that. It just doesn't work that way. People have to navigate and negotiate that as they go. Some people have entered marriage knowing they were going to be in ministry. A lot of couples I've known through the years, maybe even coming to Jesus, and they've already been married, maybe already blown up the family or marriage. And on the way, they discover this. So these are so different. And it's why we share these really as narratives of just what's happened and what's maybe worked for, but it's in no way ever put out there as the way to do this. We walk with a lot of pastoral couples today that they just do it different. They're absolutely co-pastoring hand in hand. The way Jan and I have done this, we've been married for 42 years. We've been doing this together the entire time, but we do it a little different than Michael and Brenda do it. And, you really grow to, I think, appreciate the way every couple navigates it and the way it's defined for them. So that's been my observation. And one size doesn't fit all, but when two people know they're going to do it together, I think there's things that help, help on the journey. So.
Yeah, I mean, we were actually teenagers before we ministering together before we were married. And so in our case, we had a real sense of calling to work together for the Lord as a team. So in a sense, it's a little bit of an advantage that we have of, like, this is what we felt called to as young people. And so we just seen God be so faithful. And I mean, I feel like it's like a co-calling that we have together. It feels like a co-calling. But as I say, I knew even before I met Phil, I had a sense of calling of this type of life. And so everybody doesn't have that. It's different for everybody, but every marriage is different. You bring what you bring to the marriage. You bring your gifts, you bring your calling, you bring your wiring, and together you do the dance, you figure it out, and sometimes you step on each other's toes, but you dance it.
Yeah, I think it's really important to recognize that not only is every person different, but every marriage is different, and to try to project like our gifts or our calling or the way that we operate onto other, we've learned that over the years that we can't project that onto any of the couples or individuals that we work with, and really help them kind of discern how God's invited them to kind of go with the flow and live with this thing you know, doing ministry together as family or as couple. One of the really important things that we learned early on, we actually heard it from Eleanor Mumford when she came and talked at a national conference in Anaheim years ago. And she talked about how when one of you is called to ministry in your family, in a sense, your whole family gets invited into that. And so learning how to flow together in that, learning how to work in that, learning how to have lots of communication, even though the, your roles and how you carry that out may be very different, but you're all kind of invited into the mix.
Yeah, I remember having a lot of fear that somehow ministry was going to, you know, divide our family. And I remember one thing that just stood out to me from that talk was that God doesn't divide families with ministry callings. And that just really took away my fear. And I realized, like, if we're called to some degree, you know, our children are too, and that I didn't have to sacrifice one of my children to the world to do ministry. And it just, it really settled my heart in that we would just learn, we would just do this together in the way that God had called us. And then we would all find our fit, our right seat on the bus, and you know, what it is that we're specifically gifted at and for. And so, you know, there's a lot of freedom to express that in different ways. And I also feel like as I get older, I realize that we're still being called. You don't, I don't think, you know, your calling is something that, that stretches across the whole breadth of your life, you know, not something that you decide, oh, I finally got it when I'm 25 and now I'm settled. But you're always being called to more. You're being called to more leadership and to, you know, more intimacy and to, you know, all different kinds of things, more wholeness. And so just to continue pursuing that discovery process of how do I continue to become who God made me to be? And then encouraging that in one another as well and giving room for that.
That's really good. When
let me just say, if I could say one more thing. Maybe this comes in later. However you want to do it, Justin, but the thing with timing and the different seasons, you know, although Jan and I have done this all these years, we've had different seasons where the realities were just so complex that we had to renegotiate how we did it, the roles, the participation, the lack of pressure. Our children were little, then as teenagers, and wow, we had some teenage years that were interesting and challenging. So all of that is in flux. There's a few words that are pretty important. One is negotiate, navigate, agreement. It's an evolving thing all the time. And just when it's dynamic in the sense that it's not static, this is the way we operate. We have had to renegotiate this many times through the year.
Mm-hmm. That's great, Bill. And we're going to get, you know, talk about that a little bit more. Before we get there, I want to hear a little bit about kind of co-discernment. Whenever we talk about calling, we want to talk about discernment. And Phil and Jan, you guys were talking about this a lot yesterday about how you're both discerning with God vertically as well as with your spouse. How does that play out for you guys, and how has it over the years?
Well, you learn as you're walking together as a couple, you kind of study one another. You study what one another's gifts are. You learn what one another's strengths and weaknesses are and how those operate together. But also, over the years, you learn to respect each other's what we call our vertical relationship with God. Like, I have my own personal vertical relationship with God, and Phil has his own, and we bring them together, and we're very often asking one another, you know, what's the Lord saying to you, and what's the Lord saying to me, and we share those things, and we have a respect for how the Lord speaks to one another, and it's not the same, you know. It's like, for example, I'm a dreamer. I dream at night. I have vivid, detailed dreams. Phil dreams when he's wide awake during the day. And, you know, and we share those things and we bring them together and we compare notes. So it's checking in with each other and having a respect for what the other one brings.
Yeah. Bill, I think discerning comes easier when you've got some trust. And I think that you build a foundation of that at the beginning. It's why it's so important at the beginning of these relationships, that trust is built into it, and you have confidence. I mean, you know, I just, after all these years, and even not right from the beginning, but when somebody just has a track record of hearing, and there's a mutual respect, and sometimes Jan's right, sometimes I'm right, sometimes she gets clarity, and I don't have clarity, so I'm going to go with clarity. One time I was so confused about a situation on just sort of even our calling that I got a little short with the Lord. And I said, okay, look, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going home because I was asked to do a work in Brazil. And those guys didn't have their ducks in a row. They didn't even know where the ducks were. So I was like, okay, this is obvious. This is a closed door. But I was a little frustrated. So I prayed a prayer and I said, Lord, I'm going home. I'm going to be a great youth pastor. I'm going to continue, you know, working, doing my family business goes. I'm going to be raising cows. I'm going to do what I do. We were homesteading at the time. And I said, if you want us to do something in ministry, you tell Janet. She hears better than I do. She's on me quickly. And I never told her that, but I did. When I went home, I told another person, the day that Janet says it's time for us to enter ministry, we're going to do it because, I mean, as far as, you know, full-time stuff, I said, because I just trust her, but I'm not going to try to discern this anymore because I think I've got some false starts in my mind. And sure enough, about 9 months to a year later, she came to me one night. She goes, Phil, if we're ever going to do this, we've got to do it now. Because we were getting deeper and deeper into, you know, we were in ministry, but I mean, it wasn't what we were supposed to be doing. And she said, this is what we're supposed to do. And I asked her, I said, do you feel that's the Lord? And she goes, I think so. We sold our house within 10 days of her saying that. The house was only built 2 years earlier. Left the family business and we went off to school to get trained in ministry. It was because she said it was time. So it's like you got to do this together. You discern it and you trust your partner.
Yeah, I remember a time when we were being prepared for full-time ministry and doing lay ministry. We were helping to plant a church in Minneapolis, and I really felt like, you know, the Lord spoke to me and said it was time for us to turn the church over to the other couple. And to that it wasn't where we were going to put down roots. It wasn't where we were going to raise our family. And I remember going to Michael almost urgently and in a panic and saying, we have to do this because God said it and therefore we must. And he said, do you believe that God is big enough to speak to me too? Which left me speechless, which, you know, it doesn't happen too often. But what am I supposed to say? You know, well, yeah, of course God is big enough to speak to you too. So he said, then you need to let that happen. And so I just started to pray. And then 4 months later, he said, I think I heard God say the same thing. So we realized that sometimes God would speak something to one of us. And, you know, oftentimes I would get something prophetically. And my role was not to make it happen, but to pray. And then he would get the timing. And it took both of us to get it right. Those two pieces and our gifts working together to actually obey Jesus and do the right thing. And so one of the other things I think that is so helpful now, but in the first 5 years, people often say to us now, looking at what we do, how did you guys learn to do ministry together? And I remember thinking, you know, at first I was like, wow, it's hard. I mean, it was terrible for a while, you know, it was like 10 years of, you know, making tons of mistakes. But when we think back on it, I think we finally realized that we agreed on the outcome. We agreed on where we were going, the end goal, what we wanted, where we wanted to land in ministry decisions. But the how-to, the way we were going to do it, the path we were going to take to get there was usually different. So most of our conflict wasn't about, you know, the goal. It was about the process of getting to the end goal. And so we learned that sometimes the way we get there doesn't matter as much as the fact that we're going to the right place, that God's called us and we're doing together what he told us. And so we learned to defer to each other and, you know, oh, well, in this particular ministry area, it's a little bit more in your gifting. So I'm going to defer to the way that you want and I'll support that path, or vice versa. But that was such a significant thing to realize, that it wasn't where we were going or where God, what God wanted us to do that we were in disagreement about. It was the path, the how to get there that caused us a lot of conflict. And once we realized that, we were able to back off from pushing, you know, our how to agenda and defer to other persons a lot more. And that helped us a lot in learning how to do ministry together. But that was, I mean, we were 5, 6, 7, 8 years in before we figured that out.
So a lot of that, though, is built on that foundation of trust, that I trust that the other person can hear God, and I trust they could actually accomplish this really well, even though the way they start is 180 degrees different from the way I would start. I would never start that way. But then they end up getting to their place that you really want it to get to in the end anyway. So learning how to trust that other person is like, that Phil and Jan that you guys brought up, that's right on. Excellent. You're muted.
Sorry about that. We've had a lot of questions around that seeing and supporting each other's gifts. And so, Jan, I'm going to come to you in just one second. I also want to just share the poll that we had done a minute ago. 98% of the folks are married on the call. Welcome to those folks who are, and welcome to the folks who aren't on here. And then also, we have the majority of the folks who are doing ministry with their spouse right now in some form, 86%. So just kind of by way of like who's in the room right now and what's the room makeup, that's predominantly what we're looking at right now. So Jan, when you think about the ways that you and Phil kind of supported and saw each other's gifts, what did that look like early on in ministry and as it's continued?
Phil was always calling out my gifts. He would see them. He would call them out. I've had leadership on me most of my life, but I think I'm a little bit of a reluctant leader. So Phil would call out gifts and I was more hesitant, but he wanted me to preach way before I felt I was ready to preach. And he had confidence and he saw gifts and he would say the yes and amen to things that I was timid about. So he really saw the gifts and we also recognize that our gifts are very different. Phil has spiritual gifts that I don't have and vice versa. And we've learned how the importance of bringing our gifts together, and it presents a fullness that is really, I mean, we delight in it. We delight in the differences. We delight that we don't approach things the same way. But I'm much freer now to minister in my gifts than I was, say, 20 years ago. But really, Phil's had confidence in me, and he's called out my gifts, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, I love the way that, like, when Brenda and I started learning about ourselves and learning about personality stuff, I love the way we discovered we were opposites on almost everything. Like Myers-Briggs, we were like polar opposites on every scale. But then we realized that together we brought this really unique picture, to leadership and to ministry and to the church. And so, learning to see those differences, I realized I needed, in order to actually do ministry well, it's like I could not do it without her gifts in the mix, which allowed me then to be free to actually, use mine in a much greater way. Yeah. And so I love that idea of like drawing out the other person's giftedness in that.
I always felt like Michael gave me a lot of freedom too as a woman. I remember him drawing me out as well, just like you mentioned, Janet, that he would look for ways to say, this is your thing. You'd be great at this. I remember I've always felt like I've had more freedom than I know what to do with, and that he's always championed who God made me to be. And I'm so grateful for that. And my husband, because I can't imagine, what it's like not to have that. But I would encourage men, if that's a struggle for you, whether that's, your own pride or whatever issues that is, to really take that to the Lord, because there's something he wants to do in you so that you can champion your spouse and bless and encourage and help that person thrive next to you.
Yeah, formation. Jan and I were formed different. We kept from the same hometown, but our families were different. Our family structures were different. And in life, natural life, and then in kingdom life, they're just so different. So you can either make those competitive or you can make those complementary in the sense of just seeing it. Janet's always, she's the queen of encouragement, which has just drawn life out. So because she was at such an early point of our marriage and our relationship, she would draw out that, she would encourage me. It was easier to reciprocate and just just watch that. So it's a, boy, it is just the richness. And you don't have to cover all the bases. I thank God I do not have to cover all the bases, that there are just, I have just inadequacies in life that God, somehow out of the billions of earthlings, you know, we were put together, and what we each bring is, it's just, it's a good thing to experience. Yeah.
Yeah. So another theme in the questions that we've had in getting asked, as well as kind of that, Brenda, I know you've had asked a lot, is about balance, right? There seems to be this ever-present want for family life and ministry life and marriage to have some kind of balance. How have you wrestled with that?
Well, I would say this is probably the number one question that we get asked from couples trying to do ministry together and raise family. And have healthy family, you know, dynamics. And so people, this is a really big concern. And I think that I struggled with it a lot as a mom who was called to ministry. And when the kids were little, I felt a ton of frustration, and I felt kind of pulled in different directions all the time. And I was, you know, complaining when I had to, you know, take care of kids and, you know, wanted to be doing ministry and vice versa. And so finally, I realized one day that I was pretty much asking God the wrong question, because I was trying to find balance and thought that if I just did everything right, I could somehow achieve it. And then, you know, it would bring this peace that I was looking for. And I realized, you know, that isn't going to happen. And that's because the kids are always changing. The family needs are always changing. The ministry needs are always changing. And so I felt like the Lord called me to something different. And that was, learn how to be the most flexible person in the family. If that can become what I achieve, flexibility, that I could hear the Spirit and discern what the needs are and then be flexible. And when the church needed things or the family needed things, I could just flex back and forth. And then I found that peace that I was looking for, you know, that felt like, okay, I can do this. God hasn't given me more than I can manage. You know, He's not trying to tear me apart. I'm one person with many passions. And so that was just so helpful, that whole flexible piece. And just let the whole idea that somehow you're going to arrive at some place of balance, just let it go, because it's just not achievable. That's not the goal.
Yeah, like balance. When I teach on balance, I always have people stand on one foot. So if you're listening right now, go ahead, stand on one foot. Just stand right up, one foot on the ground, and pay attention to what your foot on the ground is doing. It is constantly moving and adjusting. The only way that you have any idea of balance is if you're in constant movement and motion. And so you've got to be constantly paying attention to kind of what's going on in your life and in your body and in your family and with your emotions, so that you can make adjustments to have something that from the outside kind of looks like balance. It's constant movement. So one of the things that I forget who I was listening to, somebody I think on the radio one day that was talking about, and I think it was actually geared at leaders and pastors, and talking about that, how especially in our case where Brenda was spending a lot of days at home with our kids, that if you want to know how your family is really doing, how your marriage is doing, how the kids are doing, pay attention to your wife. She's kind of like the barometer. She knows, and trust what she's bringing up. And so when Brenda would come, you know, and step into my office and quit because she's like overwhelmed with everything and just, I can't do this anymore, and I quit, I'd realize, oh, I think the barometer like is doing something. And so
I've quit about 17 times.
And so
the gift of discernment, Michael.
Yeah. I think something might be happening here. It's like the handshake, Phil. I'm not real quick, but I think there's something going on here. And then what I discovered was there's probably a tweak or two that needs to be made. There's something that needs to be adjusted here so that we could, and then bring that back into, you know, some balance. But it's constantly adjusting, constantly changing.
That's great. Phil and Jan, what does it look like for you guys as you think about balance and priorities and managing it all?
Well, early on, we're part of a system, and we thought a lot about this because it also has been one of the major questions we've been asked through many years of remarriage priorities. And I have met many people in my life and my journey as a leader who wanted to give me a priority list of how to balance yourself, where God is first, family is second, church is third, your profession, that if, and the trouble is they the tyranny of a priority list is they get violated all the time, and they have no reality to maybe the present situation. It needs to be much more flexible.
Right, and the priority list is different according to which group you belong to.
Yeah, which, who wants to impose yeah. that priority. So years ago, I met a dear friend, and I was talking to him about this, and he gave me an illustration that changed how we deal with this totally in our life, the way we do training with people, the way we train leaders, the way we train pastors. And you want to put that up, Justin? We call this the priority wheel. And instead of a list of priorities in our family and our marriage and everything, here's our life, and God is at the center of it. And we have family, recreation, church, social life, professional development. You can fill in the pieces of the pie however you want. But with God at the center, all of those lines that go from the outer circle to the inner, those are all on hinges, and they have to be able to fluctuate according to reality. So we have a season where, you know, where our kids just needed a lot of attention. So we had to push out, you know, the spokes had to move for us. And I think this is the part that Michael's talking about, this movement, this discernment, there's a willing to change. Then we would have seasons where, for example, where the church demanded a lot because we were taking the church through a capital campaign and something else had to give, but living with a fluctuation instead of a rigid, static priority list, and which is just death to a marriage and a ministry. We learn how to navigate our life, our recreation, our development, our social life with other family and friends, the church life. And there's times where all of the, we don't have time, but we could go through the last four decades and tell you exactly how these have moved in the different seasons. And it just took, this one little thing took mega stress off from our lives and trying to balance everything out. We didn't even, because we just found, if you mean balance 50-50, I just don't think there's a reality to it. I think it's discerning and being flexible and give the attention where the attention is needed. That took pressure, it took major pressure off our marriage. It took pressure off our family. It took pressure off our church. I've taught that wheel. Any church I've pastored for many years, that wheel has become a discernible tool. And that's the way, especially dealing with marriages and families and ministry, because we all, if you're in ministry, we face unusual demands. And the rigidity of a static priority list, it's damaging. That's my personal belief.
Janet, do you have any thoughts on using that as well?
Yeah, I mean, you might have a year like we did in 1999. I donated a kidney for a kidney transplant in the beginning of the year, and Phil had a open heart surgery at the end of 99. And so all of the other categories had to shrink. And at the beginning of the year, Phil nursed me back to health. And at the end of the year, I nursed him back to health. But many of those other categories had to shrink of the time, energy, and money that we could put toward it. And we had to dedicate. And I remember at the end of that year, we always take the time around New Year's to do a reevaluation, to refresh, to revision. And I remember saying to Phil at the end of 99, I don't feel like I accomplished anything this year. You know how we are. We're so hard on ourselves. And Phil looked at me and he goes, Jan, I'm alive. And it was like I had to reevaluate, like, oh my gosh, yes, we had to dedicate a year toward the health of one another because of these health situations that we're facing, but it caused every single thing on the priority wheel to change.
That's great. So, Phil and Jan, would you tell us maybe now, what does it look like to invest in your marriage over the years? So we've talked about the need to shift, and we've talked about calling, we've talked about gifting, but there, you know, I also hear from you there, that piece of the pie, that takes time, right? That takes time and effort, whether you're nursing somebody to health or everything's going great. What does it look like for you guys to invest in your marriage over the years?
Well, it's going to be, I'm sure it's different for others, but for Jan and I, or after about 10 years, Janet started to talk to me about investing in our marriage. And I didn't catch it. I didn't understand what she was talking about the first few times she brought it up. And she said, we need to continue to invest in our marriage. And my thought was, I fell in love with Jan when I was 16 years old. So, I mean, it was never even in question. It was never a second doubt. But she drove that, like, no, this is important. This is important. And we started going to a marriage encounter, which is a guided retreat, a 48-hour guided retreat in the Catholic Church. And we went with some Anglicans. And it really, the one retreat, 1989, really changed the trajectory of our life and our marriage. And we, for us, we do one a year, where we've done for just all these years. And it's just a check-in. Sometimes we only need to dust off the furniture, you know, in the marriage. But we've learned that over that, that's just one little piece of it. And then sometimes we've had to really rearrange the furniture, and a few times we've had to blow up the furniture and get new furniture. It depends on where we're at, but we've always made room for that, and that particular thing has helped us. We've taken good days off, and we finally learned how to vacation well together. So little things like that. But I honestly, I mean, anybody that knows us knows we're always pushing this, the marriage investment, marriage encounter weekends, that focused in, and we'd started doing it when we had children, so we can't use our children as a reason not to do that. So that's something that has helped us. And since we do one a year, the churches we've worked with do two a year. And we made a commitment to take like 1,000 couples through the marriage encounter, and we're somewhere in close to 850 to 900 couples now. And so that's something we do, but that's just work for us.
That's good. And
sometimes the craziness of the schedule, you know, we're just going 100 miles an hour, and Phil will look over at me and say, are we doing good? We're okay, right? You know, it's just, you know, you're just busy doing life, but every now and then you have that check-in. And one thing we do now on a very regular, almost daily, we'll ask each other, what was your high point today? And, or, you know, in other words, where did you find consolation? What was your high point? What was life giving for you today? And we'll share that with one another. And then we'll also ask each other, what was your low point? Where was desolation? What was draining, life draining for you? And that has been just a simple little check-in that we do that helps us to really know what the other one is experiencing. And through marriage encounter too, we're not really afraid to share any feeling with one another. It's like, we can say anything. We can, yeah, pretty open.
That's cool.
I would say a lot of what works well in your marriage is because you're both individually committed to personal transformation. Like, we're still going through a lot of discipleship, and you know, we're still, right even now, going through a whole process of, you know, learning how to walk out our faith in a more holistic way, you know, mentally, emotionally, health, spiritually. And we're both changing a lot. Like right now, we're going through a real season of growth and change, but we're constantly leading ourselves to more personal transformation. And as we do that, then all of a sudden we connect better. You know, this way we have something to bring to the table for the marriage. And so this is hard if this isn't a priority, where God's changing me on the inside to be a better wife, to be a better friend, you know, to be a better ministry partner. And so that work that we do with Jesus is priceless. Like, you just can't forgo that and hope for the best in your marriage. You have to do that work and then bring that with you to the table to invest in your marriage. And, you know, we take a month off together, 4 weeks together. We find some things that we can do together, but then we also find some things we can do apart. We ride motorcycles together. We like to go shoot guns together. We, you know, get burgers at a favorite bar together on our days off. But then he has some hobbies and I have some hobbies that we can also spend a little time kind of finding pleasure and joy in things that we like as individuals. And then when we do stuff together, you know, I'm not expecting him to meet all of my needs, you know, in friendship. I have that in some other places as well. So it can just be super practical, as, you know, take some time off, do some things you like together.
And I think when you're thinking about families with children, for both of us, like our kids are older and have moved out and are paying their own bills. Thank you, Jesus. But when there's younger kids around, one of the things that I remember somebody passing on to me was that there's really no greater privilege than to be a pastoral family. It's like one of the greatest privileges like in the world to get to participate with what Jesus is doing in other people's lives in your city. And it can be all consuming. And so take time to like really do stuff as a family. And I remember our kids were in a Christian school. We were working all weekend, you know, we're working the holidays, we're doing all that kind of stuff. And so I would take them out of school sometimes on a Monday or a Tuesday or on a Friday, you know, and then do something on a Saturday. And I remember a couple times, you know, their teachers got frustrated with me. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, I'm working all weekend long. And like, if I want to take my kid out of a school on a Monday, I'm pretty sure like once or twice or 20 times a year, it's not going to kill them, especially if we're helping them do some work. And so I'll never forget one time where I took one of the kids with me on a trip to Madison. It was a regional event, and we're going to Madison, Wisconsin. And I thought, you know, the Capitol's there. Surely they can write a paper on the Capitol. So I went into the teacher, and I said, what do you want to have them do to write a paper on the Capitol, get credit? They're not going to be at school this week. They're going to be with me. And we're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to eat great food. And they can wander around the Capitol and ask people questions and do stuff. And after a little push and pull, they said, okay, your kid can go. And I go, that's great, because they're going. But, you know, here's what we can do to actually give them credit for that week. And so I think just being creative and doing some stuff like that is really, really helpful.
That's great. So as you guys think about this, you know, it seems like there's such a need for flexibility and agreement. We heard from Phil early on. There's personal growth, and there's sort of individual professional growth going on, and what's happening as a couple. As folks are listening in, we would love to hear some more of your questions and comments for Michael and Brenda. You know, one heavy hitter question, Brenda, was just to clarify, are you guys were shooting guns together, not at one another, right? That's from Jason Patrick. So they're clarifying that the guns weren't pointed at one another.
Right. No.
I'll tell you, after, you know, a weekend of, you know, pastoring, sometimes we'll just look at each other and go, people are crazy. And then we just want to go shoot guns. And it feels great on a Monday to go target practice.
I hope that doesn't get out.
I think it's kind of out.
I think it's out now.
Ride motorcycles and have a burger and target practice.
So here's a question we had come in. And one person was saying, what do you do when there's an obvious area neither of you are gifted in, but is essential for church growth or health or planting? You know, so as you guys look at each other, you say, hey, we do have lots of different gifts and skills, but hey, maybe we don't have this over here. What has been an area that you guys have found value in that?
Well, you know, I think the obvious is the fact that that's why we can't do it by ourselves. You know, we may be leaders and servant leaders, but the formation and release and calling out giftings and recognizing that in other people, it's one of the great, great, great joys of being in ministry. I always think of leadership as something that we can use for the benefit of other people finding their full potential and destiny in Jesus Christ. So, yeah, no, Jan and I, we have such a small fraction of what a local church needs. So what we do is we bring with gusto, we bring what we bring to the table, but recognizing that all the other pieces have to come from the folks. And we have made, you know, we always wanted to be incredibly transparent and vulnerable so people would not think that, you know, the pastors have it covered. And even if you present that it doesn't take long for that whole, you know, facade to come down. So I think the question is, do we recognize that we have limitations? Absolutely. Limitations. And I would say we have more limitations than we do giftings. So you just need everybody, and you got to be good with that. And I think the exciting thing for Jen and I through the years is seeing other people enter ministry. I think when I'm done, that's probably going to be, I think, one of my greatest joys.
Hey, there's a couple of really good questions about boundaries. One is boundaries about communicating about ministry when you're home, and another one about boundaries that you set with each other, the church, or other people. Let's talk for just a couple seconds about boundaries.
Yeah, I would say the whole thing about not talking about ministry at home, it didn't work for us to try to create rules around that. What we did instead was say, let's let our communication, let's us learn to be honest with each other. And because we're doing this together, and sometimes we do want to talk about it at home, you know, if one of us bumps into that place where we just can't talk about it at home, we just need to say that. And so, you know, I just say, you know what, today I need a break from that conversation. I don't know what I'm going to do or what we're going to do. Let's just pray about it for another 48 hours and talk later. Or I just can't go there today. So we try to let the communication between us dictate what will happen and when it will happen, instead of trying to obey rules, because it just didn't work for us to do that, because for probably obvious reasons, you know, we would always just end up breaking the rules anyway and doing what we wanted. So what we end up doing is, let's talk more about what we need and what we want in this moment today, and then let that determine, you know, what the boundaries are. So that's how we handled that.
Yeah. With our kids, we set some boundaries for our family early on, because I realized how many people in a very religious way had agendas of improvement for my children and our life. In two instances in particular, I remember saying, if you're not investing in my children, leave them alone. And it's sort of the same with Jan and I. If you want to invest in our lives, great. But if you're not, you know, we tried to set some effective boundaries for the pressures they get put on. And we're not even touching. I saw one of the questions come up on the screen, and I think it's something I'd really like to take a 30-second thing in. The whole issue of bivocational. I think all of us have at some point hit the bivocational reality. You know, when we were church planting in Portland, you know, 130 years ago, and at that point, to get to the next place, I worked third shift at a hotel. And so I worked 11 to 7 so that I'd have the day to do the other stuff. And Jan worked through the various and different seasons where we had to have that. So that's a whole, we haven't hit on that in this conversation, but that's a whole nother level of married and in ministry and the family, the various ages, and then the bivocational reality that most of the people that I have known through the years have had seasons of that in it, out of it, and it's all legitimate. But it basically comes down to some of the same things. Navigate, negotiate, come to a place of agreement, and flexibility, because there's just time, it just demanded. I mean, during that time, those were long days. I mean, I worked from 11 at night to 7 in the morning. And, you know, my kids were in school. We were planting the church. Jan was working, I think, a florist shop. And so, here's the whole thing. If we're doing it together and we're including one another in it, we're doing it together. That you have to navigate, you negotiate it. It makes it so, okay, these seasons come and go. And you can't stick your head in the sand and just, you know, pretend it's all going to work out. These things take energy, man, just energy of human navigation with the Holy Spirit's guidance and our sensibility. So I just wanted to make sure that got addressed to somebody who put a question up about the bivocational thing. It's another layer of navigation, negotiation, and agreement. But I always, almost anything in ministry, I'm going to fall back, no matter what the situation or the dynamics are. If you can discern together, if you can be in agreement, at some level, even if you have to give and take a little, if you navigate it and communicate, you usually can get through even the hardest seasons. And those are just some of the core principles that, without going into the details of how that worked for me, how it worked for the Gatlins, how it's worked for other couples, those are some of the core things that help. And you can fill in the blanks with the difficulties of, well, what about? I think it would still boil back to those things when we had to do bivocational work. We just had to navigate, but we negotiated it.
Yeah, that's good.
That's good. You know, John, I really asked the question, what kind of challenges do you face in staff dynamics or some misconceptions pastoring together that you've had to address? You know, I think one of the key things that I thought of immediately when I read those questions had to do with trust. And Brenda and I really early on in our marriage learned that the enemy is the enemy. Our spouse is never the enemy, you know, and I think we were engaged at that point when we kind of stumbled upon that truth, and that we're on the same team, we're allies with each other trying to accomplish the exact same thing. Janet, I think you'd used that word yesterday about being allies when we were discussing this, and learning how to actually trust one another. And so Brenda and I over the years have had to decide who oversees that person or who oversees that ministry, and then just give them the freedom to lead it. And I can give input, but she could take it or not take it. I could give her input on her sermon, and she could take it or not take it. And sometimes she takes it, and it makes it worse. And so, because it's not her personality, it's not her stuff coming out. And so I think so much of that is just trust that's built early on, that you really learn how to trust that you're on the same team with your spouse, you're going the same direction. And that makes the negotiation, that makes, you know, navigating those things, I think a tiny bit easier along the way.
We had a situation once in a staff meeting where, because, you know, I can't remember what it was. I can't even remember the issue, but, you know, and so I don't want to paint it that we get this all right, because there was one time I remember I looked at Jan and I said, okay, you need a timeout. So I gave her a timeout in a staff meeting and like four little people sitting at the table.
I think it was because Phil was trying to be real serious and he was really working on something that was like intense, and I like was cracking up and just like, adding like
listen to him.
Peanut gallery comments, and he finally was like, okay, Jan, you're done. You're like, you just need to time out.
So here's my question to all the other people. How do you think that worked out?
I have one that was really similar where I'd been actually training a brand new border collie and training him and spending every day with him. And then Brenda started to interject something at a staff meeting, and I just went, shh.
Oh.
He dog whispered me. He shushed me.
My mouth was much different.
I was upset.
Oh my gosh.
You will not dog whisper me.
And it just came out. Like, I didn't pre-plan it. It just happened. And when I do that to the border collie just sat right down. Brenda just sat right up.
That's awesome. There is a complication to this in other areas, because you're doing this together in the church. You're doing it, if it is that you work out of an office, you're doing this at home. You're talking about an intensity of life in a married couple that you, and God bless you, all of you, for endeavoring this. And we need Jesus to pull this off, because there are very few other realities out there, jobs and assignments that have the especially two people doing this together, and they're married and they minister together. That's a lot of human contact with one person.
Phil, I feel like that is just about the best ending we could end on there, is that we need Jesus to pull this off together.
We need Jesus.
And so thank you guys both. Phil and Jan, we love hearing both the high and the low points, the hard points along the way, and the 42 years of marriage together. That's something to strive for all of us. And Michael and Brenda, thank you so much for being here and just providing lots of your stories as well. Michael, with just about the best hat around the vineyard, if anybody's noticed that. We haven't had any comments on the hat yet.
Phil was teasing me that my head was too bright, and so I thought I would cover it up in some style.
It's the anointing.
Well, folks who are joining in, we just want to invite you to join us for another webinar April 26th. We're going to be talking about best practices for outreach in small town USA. We're going to have Michael Houle from the Valley Vineyard in Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, as well as Dick Ray from up in Maine near Phil and Jan, talking about outreach. And then we also want to remind, hey, Phil and Jan are here. Come to the national conference this summer if you can. In Anaheim, in July, it'll be tremendous. Phil, give them a quick pitch. What are they going to miss out on if they don't show up?
Well, we have one of the preeminent Old Testament scholars in the world. Chris Wright's going to come talk about the mission of God. And we've got some excellent Vineyard folks. They're going to talk about our ecclesiology and why we do this together. Together, leaning outward. It's going to be fun.
Wonderful. Jan, would you just pray and bless the folks who are joining us along the way here?
Yes, Jesus, we do need you to pull this off. And so we pray for all of us that you would just help us in all the areas that we struggle, and also continue to anoint our strengths and our giftings, and help us, Lord, to have healthy churches that will reproduce healthy churches all across the globe. And we just ask for your continued help in this, in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Bless you,
Amen.
Guys. Good
to be yeah, here. Bless you guys. I have one more little song for us on the way out the door.
Here you go. Stop it. Oh.
Goodbye.